You're listening to The Point. With us in studio is Susan Bellencampy, director of Mass Audubon's Felix Neck Wildlife Sanctuary. She's the author of The Nature of Martha's Vineyard. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Nice to be here.
So The Nature of Martha's Vineyard, what prompted you to start this book?
So a really interesting thing is I've been writing for over 16 years, and when you add that up, it's almost 1,000 articles. And all the time people would say, I remember you wrote this article on X, Y, sharks, fish, and I'd love to read it again, but how do I find it? And they're kind of one-hit wonders in that they're in the paper. You can go online, but you can't get all the old ones. So the inspiration was to kind of get the best of mm-hmm. and put them all together and continue to kind of spread the gospel of teaching people about nature, which is what I do.
And you kind of hit some highlights, and I'm just going to pick a few, obviously, because we can't talk about the whole book. But crows. Crows fascinate people. Kind of, they're like, love them or hate them, right? But they're so smart. And there are these crows that come from the Cape over to the vineyard and back again. It's like, they're like the commuters.
They're commuter crows. We love that. And they come, you know, it's like, they go off for the night and then they come back. And they're doing kind of, I guess it depends on whether it's the reverse commuter or not. But to see them is really kind of breathtaking and amazing. And people do love them or not love them, but there's so much to love about them. They're smart. They actually have, you know, compared to their body size, larger brains. They're communal. They actually keep their young. Second year is called auxiliaries, and they actually help take care of the new young. And it's just, they have such a rich history of using them as good luck or bad luck charms, depending on how many you see brings you luck. Or not so much luck.
Yeah, and there's all this controversy. I remember, I think it was a BBC report that was on a crow that was bringing little charms or something to someone, and someone saying, oh, it's just coincidence. But people will swear that is not coincidence.
They seem to learn and they seem to make relationships with each other and with others.
Yeah. All right, you include the heath hen.
I love the heath hen. And it's a tragic story, but one with something to learn. The vineyard, the state forest in the middle of the vineyard, was basically one of the first pieces of land preserved for an animal or for a bird. Unfortunately, it was too late, and the last heath hen was on Martha's Vineyard and died on Martha's Vineyard. So it's the story of extinction, but it's also the story of hope and people actually taking action to protect an animal and a habitat. And there's a really interesting sculpture that was done by an artist who basically went to the last place of that different birds were seen and created these giant sculptures to memorialize and honor them.
Mm. And we should mention the photographs in your book. Tim Johnson's the photographer. Beautiful photographs. What about insects and spiders? Yeah, there was so many you could choose from there. So how did you decide which ones you were going to include?
Well, spiders are fascinating. I have to share my favorite fun fact about spiders. You can identify them by the placement of their eyes.
I didn't know that.
You have to get real close, which many people don't want to do. It was an interesting process choosing, because what I realized is that I had almost 1,000, and it was a little bit difficult to figure out how to roll. I actually had a friend of mine who went through the first initial edit, and he picked about 350, and I needed about 175. So I spent all of last winter going through and like throwing this into this pile and this into that pile, and I got down to 300, and then I got down to 275, and I finally got to about 180, and I said, I can't go anymore. This is what it is. Okay.
Now, one of the things about and pollinators, mm-hmm. The vineyard seems to, I can't remember the study, but there was something that compared, you know, over time. And because there wasn't the DDT used on the vineyard, it seems like there are more pollinators, local pollinators there than in other areas around this region.
So, yeah, that's exactly what happened. But I like to say more insects, not only pollinators, but insects. The caterpillars, butterflies and moths on the island are exceptional. We have tiger beetles, diversity of insect species, because of the lack of DDT spraying. And basically what I've heard it came down to is it was too expensive to bring the chemicals over.
Wow, lucky.
And so we avoided that, and we have a lot of giant silk moss and Io moss and things that are just inspiring, Luna moss. So we see more, a higher level of insect diversity. And, you know, keeping that is really important. So that's another piece, is to let, you know, folks know that you don't want to, you want bugs. Bugs mm-hmm. are good.
Yeah, you need bugs, yeah. All right, so into the chapter on animals, I think one of the most misunderstood, the fisher.
Well, the funny part about the fishers, we don't have them on the island. Yeah. And I have
but we do on the Cape.
You do yeah. on the Cape. We have a gentleman who comes to Felix Neck every year or two to try to convince me that they exist. And I always like to say, absence of proof is not proof of absence.
But one of the things about the fisher, it is possible that you could get, I mean, if we have them in the Cape, because you don't really see them. They're nocturnal.
Right.
People think, they call them fisher cats, but they're mm-hmm. actually in the weasel family.
Right.
Yeah.
There actually was one that was a dead one that was found roadkill. And I always say never, because mm-hmm. things change. Coyotes are another ones. There's been a proof of at least one single animal, but we don't have a population of them. And they'll swim over from the Elizabeth Islands. So it's really a matter of time. And so species do change. So you just, you can never say never, but I'm always looking for proof.
And I would say, I don't think a lot of people saw them much on the Cape until, remember we had the bear that came over the
yes.
bridge and went down to Province, and everyone was looking for the bear, and all of a sudden they were getting reports.
More reports. More
on the fishers, which
right.
was really interesting. All right, something you have plenty of, skunks.
It's skunk time. Yesterday I was driving home and I smelled the skunk. So the book gives you a handy dandy recipe for de-skunking yourself and your dog. Their skunks are beginning to be active right now. Skunks are, you know, also a challenge because of they're a ground predator. And so they do actually are problematic for rare species such as the piping plover on our beaches. But they're out there and they're always reminding you of their presence.
That's for sure. It's funny because I remember being at a friend's house on the vineyard and walking at night from one house to the other, and coming along beside us, we thought was her cat. And it was a skunk, but just happy to walk along beside us. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we did not get sprayed. And the interesting thing that I learned about skunks is they're not really smelly except for when they spray. They're
right.
actually pretty clean animals.
Yes, and they don't want to spray you if they can help it.
Yeah.
And the young, you know, the early young ones will not spray.
All right, let's move on to plants. Of course, beech plums, plentiful all across our region, and people love the beech plum jelly. They go out and pick the beech
mm-hmm.
plums.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty easy if you want a low maintenance thing to put in your yard, right? If you have a sandy soil.
They're a great plant. They live in sandy soils. They don't need a lot of water. They don't need a lot of uptake. And they're dense, they're shrubby, and they're beautiful plants. They're one of the first things that will bloom in the spring, the white flowers and the bark is really dark, so it's like, mm-hmm. you know, almost a black. So all of a sudden you see on the dunes this shrub with these beautiful white flowers, and that's the beech plum. What you have to do is remember where those are, because then you need to go back and harvest come
yeah,
summer.
Yeah. What about the butterfly weed? It seems, you know, we have butterfly weed here on the Cape, but it seems like when I'm driving around on the vineyard, it is everywhere. Orange butterfly weed.
It's
so beautiful.
It's amazing. And part of it is, you know, talking about land use, is it's in open fields. And so it really, if you've got the right habitat and the right soils, you're going to get it. It's also, it's an interesting plant because people want, you know, I've seen it be cut and whatever, but it's actually a species that you should leave in place specifically for butterflies, because the monarch needs that plant as a larval plant. It's the only thing that monarch caterpillars will eat. So it's not only stunning, but it actually is really important to wildlife.
Mm. All right, lady slippers. This is one of my favorite flowers in the world. They're so beautiful. But, you know, if you have some growing in your yard or your woodsy area, lucky you, because the house I live in, once we took down a few trees when mm-hmm. we moved in there, my lady slippers were gone. They're very particular, and you can't move them.
You can't move, and that's, you know, that's the tragedy is when people try to move them yeah. because you're gonna fail.
Yeah.
They're amazing. There's actually a great story about a woman on the vineyard who would take a long-handled Q-tip and pollinate them.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because
they do. They have a tough time. They're real iconic woodland flower.
All right, let's
in that shape.
Yeah, and you had a quote in here somewhere. I'm trying to remember, but from Yule Gibbons. Was it? Do you remember what that was?
He's a favorite, so I have lots of quotes from Yule.
Okay.
Yeah, because I love the fact that he eats almost anything.
Do you remember the commercials? I think it was in the 1970s or 60s where you say, pine trees, most parts are edible.
I don't remember. I wish I did. But I actually did find something he doesn't eat. He doesn't eat jingle shells. Or
really?
Didn't. It's not jingle shells, which are the mermaid, also called mermaid's toenails. But he's an inspiration because my loves are nature and food. Yeah. So if you can marry the two, and you can always find great recipes. There's a dandelion stout. So my husband's a big stout drinker. So I'm, collecting dandelions to make beer. And there's just so many options that were inspired by him and his work.
And sea life. You have a chapter on sea life and the different clamming. Of course, a lot of people like to go clamming. Something I did not know about. You talk about razor clams.
And delicious.
I always wondered why you don't find them. And I didn't realize it's because you have to eat them right away.
That's why you don't. You have to eat them right away. And they're hard to catch. I mean, they're so deep. You know, when I'm catching them, I'm kind of up to my shoulder in muck. But if you don't eat them right away, you're not going to rarely see them in a fish market. You really have to have a supply and get it fast and eat it fast. They are delicious, though.
Yeah. And then sometimes when we have the stormy weather, you can walk down the beach and just pick the scallops up right off the top of the beach. Watch the gulls, right?
They're, oh, I know.
They know where they are.
They love them. Make sure you get them in season.
All right. The sky. You have a chapter on the sky, which I thought was interesting.
So I have a chapter. I like to say I write about everything. 2 weeks ago, I wrote about potholes. This time of year, it gets a little tough. But every day, I get a question, a text, a call. Someone has a story or a question or a problem. And that's kind of what inspires my writing. You know, if I can get a photo of it, even better. There's a beautiful photo in there of a rainbow. Mm. And so if I see it, I write about it. And after doing this for 16 years, you've got to be creative.
Yeah. All right. Fish, which you talk about fish in your chapter. A little bit about great whites?
You know, I do have a little bit on the prevalence of getting attacked by a shark, which is generally low. However, they are, they are increasing, and there's some steps you want to take to be safe. But basking sharks, I do have an article in there, and they're like this open mouth wonder, and they filter something like 20 water from 20 pools a day.
It's amazing. Yeah, and not scary at all.
They're gentle.
Yeah, they're very gentle.
You don't need to worry about
them. We are seeing increasing populations of the great white shark, and probably will continue to do so.
So be safe, take the right precautions.
Right. And then amphibians and reptiles.
Snakes. Love snakes.
I do. I love to see them in my garden, but I have to say, when they first start to move, it kind of creeps me out for a second.
Well,
they're
legless wonders.
Right? Yeah.
That's what I tell people. On the vineyard, you can be assured that there's not poisonous snakes. The only occasional poisonous snake is something that someone had it as a pet and released, which does happen.
Yeah.
You know, every couple of years we get a call from someone saying, I have a giant snake, and you say, how big? And they tell you, and you're like, you need to call animal control on that one.
Right. And do not do that. Look what happened in the Everglades by people releasing
snakes. The
boas. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. You have to talk about the pinkeltinks.
Pinkeltinks are everyone's favorite little frog. These are tree frogs that make the cacophony of sounds in the spring. And it is deafening. And typically I hear it starting in mid to late March. So I'm getting my pinkeltink ears on. And they're also incredible this time of year because they are basically frog popsicles right now. They have this special ability. They create a chemical that will allow them to freeze, but not allow what happens is if you get ice crystals, it'll slash your cells and it would kill a frog. And so what it does is its exterior is freezing, and then the cells inside of them won't freeze. And so not only do they have a compound that acts as an antifreeze, but they have another compound that prohibits the frozen section of them, half of them are frozen, from affecting the non-frozen.
That's interesting. And so as they're thawing, are they susceptible to some sort of predator that goes, oh, here's a frog popsicle, I'm going to nibble on that?
You know, everything is susceptible to predators,
right?
Whether, So they can be, but typically they're hidden.
Yeah.
You know, they're hidden below, you know, below the bark of a tree or in the leaf litter. So as long as they stay hidden, they're generally okay.
Turtles.
Love turtles.
I love turtles too. I don't want to get too close to a snapping turtle.
So I will tell you, share this with the children in your life. They love it. Turtles, this time of year, are down at the bottom of the pond. And as we know, turtles breathe air, right? Well, how are they doing it? Well, painted turtles and a couple other turtles are what we call butt breathing turtles. They can, it's anal respiration to be scientific. They can actually breathe from their hind end.
Well, that's interesting. You know, when you see a turtle, a lot of, you know, as they start moving about, you might see a painted turtle walking along. What are you supposed to do? I mean, you don't want to bring them far away, but you know, if they're in the road, would you just bring them to the side? What should you do?
So what you should do, so frogs, turtles have a very small home range. So when we get a call at Felix Neck saying, someone's saying, I'm bringing you a turtle, I say, turn around and bring it back. Because they're literally only range their whole life 1 to 2 miles. Mm-hmm. And that's what they know. They know where their food is. They know where their habitat is. They know where they can go to be dormant. If you put them somewhere else, they do not have the resources that they need. They don't know how to get them. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when you see them crossing the road, you want to continue to put them in the direction they're going.
Just bring them to the other side of
the road. Don't go backwards because they're just gonna go over again because they're moving around for, you know, breeding purposes. And but they're also interesting because you find them in the same place. There's a great story in the book about Tom Hodgson from West Tisbury, who found a turtle with years carved on it. And the first year was in the 1800s during the Civil War. And he found it when Obama was president.
Wow.
They're very long lived. You know, 100 plus years is not uncommon. This was a box turtle that Tom had found.
Right. The book is The Nature of Martha's Vineyard. Susan Bellencampy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Coming up after a break, we talk with composer Michael Donovan about his new symphonic work inspired by the waters of Buzzards Bay.